Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Chocolate Puma Podcast. It is I, your boy, the Chocolate Puma, excuse me, my word, back giving you, my loyal tens of listeners, what you need. Let's go through some of the show notes. If you want to email the show, you got some ideas for some shows, you want to join the show, that's fine. Just shoot me an email at thepumapod@gmail.com. If you want to send me a pair of Space Jam 11s, size 12, hit me up. thepumapod@gmail.com. I don't know why my brain just farted right there for a second. Isn't that something? If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at btomp20, B-T-H-O-M-P-20. So this week we have a extremely special show. I sat down and for you, my loyal 10 listener nation, I put myself through some pain. I suffered for this audio art that you all crave. And thanks to a good friend of mine and good friend of the show, Carol, who gave me the idea to do a hate review of the movie Twilight. That's right. I sat down and I watched Twilight and it was god awful. Okay. I'm sorry to that lady who wrote the article that said if you didn't like Twilight, you're a sexist. I love the ladies. Okay. I think you're great. But this movie is shitty. It's so bad. And we're joined by Luis, who also feels the same way, I'm hoping. I got that impression when we recorded this. This movie is, whoo boy, it is bad. It is bad, bad. But don't just take my word for it. Take Carol and Luis's word for it, because we sat down and recorded for about an hour and a half talking Twilight, baby. So without further ado, I give to you a couple of trash bags, thus discussing a bad movie.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Yeah, we're official.
Has the option to leave the meeting. I might.
Hey, you signed up for this. So you got to recount all the pain that we're about to go through as a family. I feel like we're family now. We're bonded through a traumatic experience.
And you've said family twice in the first minute of this meeting. Are you sure this isn't for Fast and Furious?
Right. Fast and Furious podcast now.
It could be. Plot twist. I am Night Shyamalan, you two, into thinking it was about Twilight. Actually, it's Fast 9.
There we go. Let's go. I'm already ready. It's the only thing I think about for most of my day. I'm sorry, Carol.
All right, no, Twilight. This is, here we go. Buckle up, fucksticks.
You people are in for experience. And that experience is the 2008 film of the romance and fantasy genre, Twilight, directed by Katherine Hardwick. High school student Bella Swan, played by Kristen Stewart, always a bit of a misfit, doesn't expect life to change much when she moves from sunny Arizona to rainy Washington State. Then she meets Edward Cullen, played by Robert Pattinson, a handsome but mysterious teen whose eyes seem to peer directly into her soul. Edward is a vampire whose family does not drink blood, and Bella, far from being frightened, enters into a dangerous romance with her immortal soulmate.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Now, when you hear it like that, it sounds somewhat interesting.
somewhat.
Yeah, I'm clearly not the target audience, but boy, did I watch it and boy, did I have thoughts.
Now, question, Brian, did you watch this movie when it first came out, or are you like fresh out on this movie? Did you just get here?
I just got here. Carol sent me a message on Instagram and said that you should watch this. And I said, you know what? I should watch this and we should do a podcast about this, because this is, if I'm going to do this, I'm getting some content out of it. So,
all right. So Carol, you now owe Brian a life debt that you will never be able to repay because of what you've inflicted upon this poor man. 100%.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Brian.
I could not get through this in one sitting. I was telling Carol, I had to like break this up into multiple viewings because there'd get to a point where I'd be like, oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me. And then I was like, that's the time where I was like, all right, well, I'm gonna hit pause here, put a pin in it, come back tomorrow night, we'll try again.
Oh, this is phenomenal. All right, let's get going.
I just want to say, Lewis and I have watched this movie twice in the last, 3 weeks, which is really pretty horrifying.
That's three more times than we should have watched it.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one.
So, right off the bat, when we start this movie off, I think that as it's going through and it's talking about, like, it's kind of giving you, setting the mood with the deer, with the innocent deer, just like out there in the forest, the shaky cam is nauseating. It is the first scene we get from the movie. It's supposed to set up the whole like wilderness, the very like cyanotype like feel and vibe to the entire movie, with everything is like cloudy and everything is like has a hint of mystery. But if we were going by that first scene, I would say, cool, this movie is nauseating. That's the other big takeaway. Which, I mean, technically, I would say it's possibly successful.
It's very successful in that it made me very nauseous.
The whole movie is nauseating for different reasons. But yeah, the deer in the beginning, it's like, I just started laughing. I'm like, it's like immediate drama. And like Edward tackles the deer.
Like, okay, so there is, I gotta find, what did I write here about, like, literally the first, like, 7 seconds of the movie, I had notes. Yeah, okay, so it is rated PG-13 for, where did it go? Oh, man, I lost it violent, that quick. Right. It was, like, some violence and a scene of sensuality.
Yeah, I noticed that too today.
And I was in tears. I was like, okay, I might be able to like laugh my way through this. And then everything you said about the deer happened.
With Bella voicing over that, like, I never thought about my death. I don't know, it's just like so dramatic, the whole thing.
I mean, I feel like, you know, it does set the scene in a way really quickly. It's like, are you ready for teenage melodrama? And at that point in time, if that first scene was like, and the VO was very specifically like it sets the scene and you're like, oh, I don't want a teenage melodrama. You could leave the theater right at that moment. They would probably give you a refund and you'd be like, okay, cool. That wasn't what I signed up for. But if you stay beyond that scene, like we all did, and like how you forced Brian to, you know what you're in for.
Yes. And then you cut to Bella in Arizona. Okay, my twin sister lives in Arizona. Uh-huh. At no point in her time in Arizona have I ever seen her wear two shirts, particularly around this time of year. It is hot as balls in Arizona right now. And this girl, pale as hell, in two shirts. Not one, two.
Yeah. She's the whitest person I've ever seen. Like, she lives in Phoenix, and she's so pale. I can't handle it.
I'm just blown away that they found a way to take, like, Phoenix, Arizona, which is just like, you know, for any listeners that aren't from the United States, it is a sun-bleached hellscape purely in temperature-wise. I'm not passing judgment on the people or the place, but it is just sun-baked to the maximum. And because of the like the filming style that they kind of went with and the overall like vibe for the movie, they still put like the whole like cyan vibe on top of the yellow, super yellowy, like, and like browns of the of that location. So it gives you this weird sickly green that is, I'm so happy they cut away from that scene so fast.
Yeah. And I'm just like confused by everything. Like, again, I sell cars. I've talked to some people that work at a Mercedes dealership out there, and it's so hot that they actually have to put cups of water in the cars to make sure the leather seats don't dry up and crack. Yet everyone here is just comfortably walking around like, oh, ta-ta-ta, I've got two shirts on. There's a dude with like big cargo shorts on. Mom's got this big gardening getup on. Nothing makes sense.
I mean, and again, like, let's just, it's the, this is now what, the first minute, I think, of the movie, the first minute and a half. Yes. It's setting you up for exactly what this movie's going to deliver.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I haven't been to Arizona. I haven't been to this portion of Washington State. I know people in both, and neither one of them will tell you, like, this is not what this place is like at all. Looks like we lost Carol. She couldn't hang.
I will say, she just shot me a text. Her power went out.
Oh, no.
And I don't know if that's it. That is a bold-faced lie that she's, like, just reliving Twilight for the third time in 2 weeks. She's like, let me just take an axe to the breaker. Like, I'm done here.
She's got PTSD from this melodramatic teenage vampire love story. And I get it.
So the story at this point is specifically that Bella is now going to live with her father because her mother and her mother's basically going to be, like, traveling total roadie with her boyfriend, and her boyfriend plays baseball. So that's kind of the setup that we're feeling at this moment. So Bella is now going to Forks, Washington to stay with her father, Charlie.
Yes.
Which, by the way, like, I'm going to say it now right off the bat, and I'm going to say it at the end of the movie and throughout the movie, throughout this podcast, I'm going to keep mentioning it, that, like, Charlie is the best piece of this entire movie. Like, he's the like the circle of sanity that everything kind of flows around. And I actually think that he's probably the best bit of acting in this entire movie. And that was Billy Burke's character, Charlie.
It's the nonverbal stuff he does that really just, I identify with, like, the side eye he gives, like, just at random moments, like, what are you brooding about? You have nothing to brood. You don't have bills. You don't have anything to worry about. Just go to school.
It's 100%. And it's like, it's one of those things that, like, I'm amazed I haven't seen this actor in more things because of how, like, flawlessly he nailed all these beats. And, like, he's kind of playing the straight man, right? To, like, to all the other kind of, like, events happening around him, especially Bella. And still, it's the best bit of acting, and poor Charlie does not deserve anything that happens to him in this damn movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Sorry, my power went out.
Oh, no.
I missed a few minutes, I think.
It's okay. You just missed the hellscape that is her escaping the hellscape that is Arizona into the lush, also somehow green filter paradise of Forks, Washington.
Yeah, and she's, like, carrying a cactus with her.
Lovingly carrying a cactus. Which, again, we just talked about how great her dad is. Like, the look he gives her, like, when he sees her with this cactus is like, you gotta be kidding me.
I love her dad. And she's, like, not the best to him.
No, absolutely she is not. One thing that I thought was so weird, and, like, as we transition to the next scene when she's, like, she's now done the trip, he's picked her up, and now he's kind of, like, oh, and she's walking through the house, his house where she's going to be staying, is that, like, he's, you know, he's kind of doing the whole, like, thing where you do when someone first comes over, and you're kind of like hosting them slightly through the house, like, you know, you're over here, bathroom's over here, and he mentions, like, bathroom's on the right or on the left or something, and she just, like, it's like this weird thing where she just says, oh, right, one bathroom,
right,
full stop. And I was just like, that's such a weird line to keep in this movie.
Also, it just shows, like, what kind of petulant little brat are you, right? How dare you, you pay zero bills here. You have zero right to complain.
Right.
There's two people in this house.
Two of them.
Yeah, and one of them is like, he's not the police chief. He's like a
police officer.
Yeah, he's a police officer, but he's higher up in the police, yeah. Which means that he's not going to be home ever.
Yeah.
It was just him in the house until you showed up 15 minutes ago.
Right.
Why would he have more than one bathroom?
Oh, right. One bathroom. Get out of here. Already I'm like, you're wrong, he's right, I hate you right off the bat, Bella. Thank you
very much. Yeah, I would have been like, yeah, one bathroom for one person. You can go back home if you want.
Take your damn cactus with you.
Yeah. Actually, I would have took the cactus.
This is mine now. Get out.
Oh, man. And then the blacks show up, which that's a very odd sentence for me to say. I just have it here written down, the black show up, question mark.
Yes, Black is their last name.
Yes.
Billy and Jacob.
Yeah.
And what on earth is going on with Jacob's hairline?
I don't know. Was that a wig?
It's a wig.
It's a wig. Okay.
It's gotta be a wig. So weird.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going for, but whatever they're going for, they did not achieve it at all.
I mean, I guess they wanted to like be as clear as possible in any shape, way, or form. This character is a Native American character. Look at his flowing, stereotypical jet black locks. Thank you, production team. You're nailing it, really. I will say again, kind of to what I said when your power was out and you decided to abscond from reliving the Twilight experience, is that again, Billy Burke's Charlie character is absolutely the best bit of this movie, and the charm of him and the Billy Black character interacting, again, the best acting in the entire movie, the most charming. I'm like, I want to watch these two guys just sit on the couch and watch football. Like, I'm in.
Yes, they have a cute bromance.
Absolutely. I like them.
Also, they both can get it.
But is Billy getting it because, like, his daughter's awful? Like...
Charlie, you mean?
Charlie, yeah.
Yeah, I don't love his mustache, but it's funny. Like, you know, when I was a teenager, well, I don't know, when did this come out? 2008? I don't know how old I was.
2008.
Like, you're attracted to, like, Edward and Jacob, but now I'm in my late 30s. I'm like, all right, Charlie and Billy. Pretty good looking.
I have to say that, to your point, like ever since the entirety of the Netflix movies re-landed on, ever since the entirety of the Twilight movies landed on Netflix just recently, which again made you and I go down this adventure, made you punish Brian, you know, ipso facto. Ever since that happened, TikTok has been having so many people our age reacting to, you know, just filming themselves reacting to the Twilight movies, and everyone is agreeing with you, Carol. Everyone's like, me watching this movie for the first time since I was a teenager, and they just show like a supercut of Billy Burke's Charlie character, and they're like, oh, Lord.
Yeah, so then she goes to first day of high school. Yeah. She has a truck, not a nice truck. But she has a vehicle now.
What is Forks, Washington? The 3,000 people. Like, this is not a nice town.
Yeah. I don't, even if it is a nice town, if you're a high schooler with a car, right. I feel like as long as you're not in like Beverly Hills,
yeah,
you're probably going to be all right. Like, they're not going to be like, ew, I'd rather walk. Yeah. And everybody's looking at her like, ew, look at her. She's in a truck. And I'm like, you got dropped off on the school bus. What are you complaining about?
Right. Yeah, they're so judgy. But, you know, she's a misfit, so.
Judgy, yet somehow envious, it would appear.
Right. Which, I mean, this is going to lead us into the dynamic, like all of, like, you know, five scenes from here where we get to discuss Bella and, like, apparently her allure. But on the car thing, I love how it kind of seems like she's getting there late or like just barely on time, but she gets the best parking spot in the entire parking lot. It's straight up next to the entrance. I'm like, okay, all right.
Yeah, you're right.
Movie magic is movie magic. Let's just let it be.
You're not a senior. Wait, I don't know. You might be a senior. I don't know. You're not like the captain of the basketball or football team. Like, You haven't done anything to earn that parking spot. What are you doing there?
You're not staff. You're not handicapped or like alternately abled. No, you just showed up in an old ass truck. You got the prime spot. Like, it's in.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, I went to high school in the city, so this is kind of like news to me, and maybe to some of the listeners, it'll be like, hey, what are you talking about? This isn't weird at all, Lewis. But it's so bizarre to me that like it seems like everyone has a car. Everyone has like their best friend or they themselves have a car, and it is batshit crazy to me later on that we see the Cullens pull up in a literal brand new drop top Mercedes and a brand new Jeep Wrangler. And I'm like, no, this doesn't happen unless you're, again, Beverly Hills level money. I'm like, okay, all right, let's just, again, red flag.
They've had like hundreds of years to build up their wealth, apparently.
So. Yeah, but they're supposed to be staying incognito, man.
Right.
Yeah. That's a horrible job. There's
nothing about them that fits into any situation.
A friend of mine, like both of his parents are surgeons. You know what he drove? He drove nothing. He had to walk to school. And they can afford a car for him.
Like, no, you're still an idiot kid. I'm not going to get you a car. No, walk.
They were absolutely idiots. Like, no, we did not deserve it. But yeah.
The high school boys in this movie are particularly like idiotic. Like they're so dumb. Not so, Collins, they're a whole other category, but
yeah, because to your point, they're not boys at all. They're all 30-year-old adults.
Yeah, they're grown ass adults.
One thing that was super weird was that in the scene very like close adjacent to this, you know, it cuts to Bella playing volleyball in PE class. And it is, so first of all, she's doing her best Daria impression, like minimal movement. Like she's just kind of like terrified of a volleyball. She thinks it might eat her. Like, and like, I love the fact that they caught the action of the volleyball with like 50 different takes. It pleased my soul. I'm like, yes, this is how you put together the most high speed of volleyball game. But in one moment, like the ball's coming at her, she deflects it into far away from her, and it hits the Michael Welch's character, Mike Newton. It hits him in the back of the head. And then like this is kind of like the meet cute between her and between Bella and the Mike Newton character. And like it is such a weird, it's the first lineup of super weird exchanges between Bella and especially the boys, but the entire rest of the cast of similar age. Like, wow. He's like, he does this thing where he's like, you're good, after she says like the most terrible innocuous dad joke. And he just kind of like gestures at her like a maniac, pointing at her face. And I'm like, it's just the epitome of forced.
Well, even like the handshake was like, he's like, yes. And she's like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Like,
it's so awkward.
It's like, it's the first time she's ever shaken anyone's hand. Like, he's saying hello, you moron. Like, just shake his hand. Like, stick your hand out.
Oh, man. That's also the first time that we see Anna Kendrick, which obviously, like, I don't think at the time Anna Kendrick was that famous, but, like, now, you know, like, Anna Kendrick's very famous. But we see her weirdly sycophantic character just pop up like a Pokemon being summoned the moment anyone interacts with the Mike Newton character.
Right.
Yeah. Anna Kendrick, in hindsight, She was the one who could get it. I know they were pushing they were really pushing Kristen Stewart there for a minute, yeah. But in the background, it was Anna Kendrick who emerged.
I will 100% counter that. So I watched these movies when they came out. My girlfriend at the time was like, she was just like a general fan of pop culture. She's like, I want to go watch them, but I won't ask you to. I'm like, it's okay, let's go watch it. This was back in my youth where I wanted to give movies a fair shake and not just take anyone's opinion. I was like, you know what, let me go watch it still. Maybe there's some gem I can take away. That was naive of me, 100%. I know this now. But I would say No to you, sir. It's actually Christian Serratus' character, Angela, who's again part of the little group of girls. She's immediately, I remember like, that girl is gorgeous. And this was like high school me. So like, you know, it wasn't inappropriate. And I think if we were to do like a quick Google search, Anna Kendrick's got competition, 100%.
I think what this is all saying though is Kristen Stewart absolutely is not in the running.
No. Her acting. It's a lot of just like breathy talking and like sighs, dramatic sighs.
And,
like,
and very wooden.
Yes.
It's like watching like a plank.
Yeah.
Like go through the motions.
This movie and all the cast and all the acting happens to Kristen Stewart and her character. 100%.
Now, after the aforementioned volleyball scene, they're in the lunchroom. And this is where we get our first glimpse of the Cullen crew.
It's like they're entering school for the first time that day at lunch.
Lunchtime. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, well, I just want to say this. They're all 100 years old. The hell are they hanging out at high schools for?
Why? There's no reason.
They're obviously rich. It's not like they're going to be like, oh boy, I graduated high school. It's time for me to go and get that accounting degree. Like, no, like you're just going to go back to your house and play weird baseball during thunderstorms.
It's so bizarre to me because later on, we get the story of like the whole thing, like they try to keep a low cover by going back to high school. But I would want, the argument is completely moot. You are forcing yourself as an individual to be around a massive population and have to force yourself to interact with them. That is like literally trying to like show someone, please look at me, discover that I'm a vampire, and I clearly look 36 years old. Just stay home.
And not to mention, you're in Forks, Washington. You have the cars you mentioned earlier. Plus, you're dressed like you're in some apocalyptic H&M. Like, you're going to stand out from high schoolers.
Right. They could have been, like, 20 in their 20s, you know? Even if they are 17, eternally 17 or whatever the fuck they are. But they all look like they're in their 30s. And also, Jasper, who always looks like he just shit his pants or is like in severe pain. He's supposed to be the newest vampire and it's very difficult for him. So why did they put him in a high school with hundreds of humans around him every day?
Facts. It's the most insane possible cover in existence.
And if you are trying to get somebody like comfortable, a high school is not the place to do it because fun fact, high schoolers are assholes. And I know this because I was an asshole. I had a teacher who fell and broke her leg. Now, my friend Marcus wrote a paper. And if you look at each letter of the, like coming down the page, it read, Miss Eckhart is a cripple. Why did we do that?
Oh, Marcus.
Just completely lacking in empathy and lacking in understanding. Like, it's like, it's the worst place to put this Jasper character.
And that is like the best case scenario for a high schooler. Like, they tear apart student teachers all the time. And you're going to just put this poor, freshly made idiot into this situation? He's going to die.
Or murder like an entire classroom.
That's more like
right.
Absolutely. It's funny, like, again, like just looking, and the one thing that's always difficult when you're rewatching an older movie is that it's really easy to criticize the fashion, right? Because it's like, oh my God, this is the worst thing in the world. Like, it's so off-putting. So I was trying specifically to look past that. But even looking past that, like Ashley Green's Alice character is the only one that looks maybe close to high school age. Like, again, like a very, like, ultra polished H&M version of high school, like the high school version that would be in like a Michael Bay movie, you know, but she's the closest one. But everyone else, I mean, Kellen Lutz is 100% 31 years old.
Who's
like
that?
there's no
research on people's actual names. I don't know, you gotta say their character name.
Kellan Lutz was the character that played Emmett Cullen.
Oh,
he, he was he used like the jock,
big swole,
big guy. Yeah, the guy who comes riding into the school parking lot, standing up in the back of the Jeep.
Because he has to be inconspicuous.
Yo, it's like 7:15 in the morning, and this dude's like, yeah, let's fucking go. Are you, like, it's just so weird. Again, choices were made. Lines in the sand were drawn. We now live with them.
Oh. Now our next scene, we have Bella. Bella entering a classroom, and she walks past a fan. As she walks past the fan and it wafts through her hair, they cut to Edward, who looks visibly sickened. He looks like he is vomiting in his mouth. He is disgusted. He looks at her and he just puts his hand over his mouth. He can't even hide his disgust.
I have never knowingly, maybe I have never knowingly witnessed an adult explosively shit their pants, but I have to believe that it would, that the expression on the person's face would look like Edward Cullen in that moment. I was blown away. Like, I cannot understand, like, how these decisions were meant to foster an idea of like, ooh, he's McDreamy.
Right. Yeah, and then he has to run out of the classroom because he cannot handle it.
Yeah, and again, he could have just run home and realized, oh, I don't have to go back to school because I'm 109 years old.
No, he goes to the office to request a class change.
And she goes immediately, like, I mean, I remember high school. I never went into the guidance counselor or principal's office ever for any reason. Right, unless I was in trouble. So we then cut to Bella. I mean, I still want to like dwell on like the insanity of their conversation, but we then cut at, after that scene,
they don't have a conversation,
to her going to the exact same office that he is in. I'm like, what? Like, it was like a 4 minute window of time.
Yeah, it doesn't
stayed in the it's bizarre. It's
also then, on your first day, you go to the guidance counselor office. You know how many times I went to the guidance counselor's office in high school? I went once, and that's because we had to have our graduation form signed by our guidance counselor. It was our first and last meeting.
It's just not a thing that students ever would do unless they were forced to go.
Yes.
The conversation between her and Edward. So basically, when I was watching this movie, I wrote down a massive, any moment where there was like, hi, I'm a red flag. And this is absolutely the first moment that I'm like, oh, okay, cool. This is like the beginning of the red flag scene. The conversation between Edward and Bella is so awkward, confrontational, and like a weird form of like invasive that like, that's just not how people interact unless everyone is an oversharer or you're literally in therapy. Like it's not the right vibe at all.
What scene, what conversation are you?
This is the conversation when they first meet right after Edward has the whole like shit his pants face look.
They talk then? I didn't write notes. What do they say?
They do talk then for like a tiny amount of time and he just like, he just bolts out.
Yeah.
All right. I don't remember.
It's just weird.
But yeah. Pretty much every conversation in the early like times when they're first getting to know each other, Edward's so like rude and like disgusted and like he's acting so immature, but he's 109. Like they all have these angsty teen vibes, but they're all really old.
Yeah, like when you get old, I mean, you get old, you get crotchety, you don't want to deal with people. I get it.
Okay,
but you don't act like, no, this is just like over the top ridiculous.
Yes.
Oh, I do have to apologize that when I said that they have the conversation, that's later when Edward shows back up. In class.
Yeah, that's what So he disappears from school for a few days because he cannot handle her scent.
Which I mean, I've done that before to a lab partner. I've disappeared because I couldn't handle
it. Yeah.
Well, before she realizes he's disappeared for a few days, she waits for him in the parking lot. Yeah. She said, I plan to confront him to see what his problem was.
Right.
I have been rejected before. And let me tell you, what the first thing I didn't do, I didn't wait for that person in the parking lot and be like, hey, sweetheart, why didn't you accept me?
Because of course, when you got rejected, it happened back in the 30s. You're like, hey, sweetheart, why did you reject me?
Look here, doll face.
Yeah, and he didn't, like, I mean, okay, that would be an unsettling experience for someone to act like they were repulsed. They were like visibly repulsed by you. But it's like her second day at school. She's going to confront him in the parking lot. I don't
know. Yeah. Also, like, it's your first day of school. People are going to be weird. Like, right. It's high school. It's clicky. Yeah. They know it. They already know everybody because it's Forks, Washington.
Right.
Like, yeah, of course they're going to be a little bit, you know, apprehensive to the girl walking around carrying a cactus.
Which is literally the exact opposite vibe. Like, everyone is so blown away by the Bella character that they make such insane character choices that for the longest time, I didn't understand what it was. Like, but like back when I first watched these movies and I was kind of like, oh, whatever, like these movies are just crazy disjointed. And then after rewatching it for this podcast, I then realized that we are supposed to believe that Bella is such an enchanting, powerful presence that she literally drives everyone around her into a frenzy of some sort. It makes all the women want to be her. It makes all the men want her. And it makes some vampires want to eat her. It's just like the life, right? And like, I mean, that's the vibe I want to cultivate. I just can't get there.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some people that people are drawn to them, but not to this level, like where every single person is like, have you seen Bella?
Like, right. Oh, and the character Eric, he keeps calling her baby. I'm like, what are you doing? Gross. But all the boys like flock to her. Like it's really unbelievable because she's just a wooden plank.
And her personality is just so sparkling.
Yeah. sparkling, literally.
Not yet.
We're not there yet.
Justin Chan's Eric character is like it's salt in my wounds. Like it is like I was trying to look past the character stylistic choices, the hair, the ties in high school, you know what I mean? I was just trying to get past that. But his exhausting chipperness, his motor mouth, and his like weird fucking choices of like how he approaches Bella is just literally I want to hop into a wood chipper. It's insane.
Yeah, wearing a tie in high school. I wrote that down. I was like, who wears a tie? Like a dress shirt and a tie in high school.
Yeah, I feel like I've wore like a dress shirt because my baseball coach had this weird thing where like game day, you gotta be serious. Okay. You gotta wear a suit. Yeah, you know, that was his thing. I don't know why. We were a very bad team. It didn't help.
Definitely doesn't play sports.
Yes.
No, he's got a wet noodle thing going on at best.
He's too busy calling all the babes baby. And
yeah.
I mean, that's clearly working out for him. So, you know.
Well, Angela's into it.
Yeah. Hey, if she likes it, I love it.
So next, I think the next scene goes to Bella in bed and she's like dreaming and like moving around in her sleep, and then you cut to the corner of the room and Edward's standing in her bedroom watching her sleep.
Oh my god, no, that is like I 100% want to delve into the insanity of that, but you missed one of the most explosive action moments in this entire movie. You missed the moment that Bella's about to get murder killed by a van out of control in a parking lot that's like 150 meters long. But it's okay. This van is out of control doing like a full like 17 miles an hour. But it's okay. There was a lot of smash cuts to really kind of help get us that Fast and Furious vibe.
Feeling tires. It was like he was speeding in the parking lot. But
what I didn't know. So he's coming straight, and then he just veers left. So there was no reason for him to be even going anywhere near her.
Right.
And okay, I don't think that there was any ice or anything like on the parking. Like they could have at least like sprayed some snow or something.
I think they showed in the scene before when Ella slips on the ice on her way to her truck in the morning. Yeah. That's like, oh, it's slippery out. And then the guy like crashes into her.
Which
almost absolutely
insane. It is broad daylight. All the students are leaving school at the exact same time. Obviously, school's out. And again, Bella is the center of this world. So everyone is all eyes on Bella at all times. Yet somehow, again, this out of control 17 mile an hour van just breaks the laws of physics, does a sweet ass like side swipe to murder her. Edward straight up like Bleach anime level, like Shunpo sidestep, disappears from where he's at, hops next to her, just straight up stiff arms the van, which I love the tinfoil door panel. I love the production team's choices on that. And then after the moment, which again, now it's a car crash scene. And again, that will actually in reality attract all eyes.
Yeah.
He just like pops up and runs away.
Scampered.
No one notices. Just scampers away. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm like, and then like 50 students run over to Bella.
And nobody's no one like, knows. Everybody's like, Bella, are you okay? Yeah. And nobody's like, did that dude just stiff arm a 1994 Astro?
Right.
Like,
nobody questioned the dent in the car. Like, yeah. No
straight
one.
Up handprint.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad she's okay and everything. But that dude just stiff armed a van, right?
No one even notices that he was there. And like, again, it's one of those things where like, I kind of wish they just went either harder into the whole like super speed the vampires have, but instead for some reason like the director keeps making them go incredibly slow for slow-mo scenes. I know slow-mo was a big thing in Hollywood at the time, but like at least do the whole like, you know, like the whole like Flash TV show like sped up kind of like person kind of disappears away. No, he just somersaults her truck, just whoop, hops over the edge, disappears into the somewhere.
I just wish that they had just cut to like maybe a janitor in the background, just like going like, is that, did he just, and nobody ever addresses it. It's just this confused old man in the background, like with a shovel, like, did that kid just, no, nobody?
It's just like that Tom Segura vibe. It's just like, is anybody seeing this shit? Like,
no, is it just me? Okay, all right, whatever. Teach his own.
Oh my gosh. After that, we get the hospital scene, which again, like Billy Burke's Charlie character is again, the best acted part of this. He rushes in to Bella when she's being checked out by the nurse, or when she's waiting to be checked out by Dr. Carlisle right before we meet him. He rushes in immediately. You get like, again, it's the most realistic part of this. Like the guy's like, I'm so sorry, Bella, the guy that almost killed her with his van. And he's like, I'll fucking get to you. And yeah. I was like, oh, that boy's in trouble. Like,
kiss your license goodbye.
Yeah, like that dude is toast. His permit is toast. He's gonna get community service, I promise you. Like, yeah.
And then we meet Dr. Cullen. Supposed to be the father, foster father, adoptive father of all these kids. They look the same exact age. Right?
And also, nobody's going to be like, this guy looks like a corpse.
Right.
He's like chalky white.
He bathed in like baby powder. I don't know, but he's so disgustingly pale. Definitely a corpse vibe. Yeah.
And then we get the dream sequence.
Oh, yeah.
The very creepy dream sequence where, and he's just like hanging out in the corner. Just, you know,
standing there,
just looking,
you know. Just looking.
I was really curious as to what was the intention for that scene. And like, Carol, I'm going to just straight up sell you down the river. you've read these books before. So like, Brian, Carol is our Twilight expert. We are simply just players and
hosts.
Okay, books came out in 2005. Well, the first one. It's been a long time.
Okay. But what I'm, all this to say that it looked like she was having a dream, but the way it was shot, it seemed like it was kind of supposed to be like really a little bit erotic dream. Like,
I know.
It was uncomfortable.
And she was like, that was the first time I dreamed of Edward Cullen.
It was like, wink!
Yeah, and like, all right, so I'm not crazy, because like, before she gets up and she even says the whole, like, that's the first time I dreamt of Edward Cullen, it's just like, she's wearing a tank top, the way the light's hitting her, the way like, there's like the ruffled of her sheets, and like, the way she's kind of moving, it looks very like,
yeah,
girl is having like, a dream. So was that the whole vibe? Like,
Edward
was there in the room looking at her and like just like psychically being like, yeah.
I've been planting thoughts in your head.
Oh man. And then she wakes up, sees Edward Cullen, and doesn't scream immediately.
Right?
I'm sorry. I could wake up and like see Gigi Hadid at the foot of my bed and I would still fucking scream. Like, it doesn't.
I've woken up and my child has been staring at me and I screamed. And I would die for this boy. Certainly, if I saw somebody I just met last week, I'm absolutely going to scream.
Oh my god.
Oh man. She just like sees him and she's like, oh, let me get the light.
And then he's gone.
Yeah. Ugh. I think it's bananas. She doesn't get out of bed. Like, she doesn't like look around. She's not like, yo, Charlie, is the door? Are the doors? Charlie, are you home? Dad? Nothing.
Check the window. Like
okay. Next scene. My gosh.
Oh boy.
The next scene is what's the annoying boy, high school boy, asking her to prom?
Oh, it's all of the annoying. It's all of the high school boys in this movie. They're all annoying.
Well, I know they are.
Oh, it's Mike Newman.
Mike Newman. Yeah, and she's like, I'm gonna be away. I'm in Jacksonville, and Edward's like staring at her as she's like talking to Mike, and then later is like, what's in Jacksonville? So creepy.
Oh, that scene is so bizarre. Where they're in the greenhouse, like on the field trip with Jose Zuniga's character. Which, by the way, Jose Zuniga, I love the fact that I finally got to see, he's the teacher. I love the fact that we finally get to see Jose do not a part where he's playing a tough guy or like a hard boiled like blue collar dude, because that is 100% of like he's a phenomenal character actor, but that's 100% of what I've seen of him. So it was just kind of great to have him be like a happy go lucky weird dad jokey, just like a dorky teacher. That was cool.
Yeah,
but. Man, the convert, like, again, it's the same exact vibe from earlier, where it's like, the Cullen and Bella dynamic is so confrontational and awkward and like I want to be your friend, but then immediately like super cold was like, well, maybe you shouldn't. Like, it's just, it's so bizarre.
He says to her, you don't know anything. Like, literally. I wrote that down. Like, oh, I can see why she's so into him. She's like so drawn to him, and he's nothing but an asshole to her.
Yeah, it feels like really like, I don't know, I don't want to say like predatory, but it feels predatory to have like a 109-year-old dude being like, where are you going? Why are you going? You don't know anything. It's like, oh, this feels somewhat abusive.
And again, red flag alert, she's like, yeah, that's my shit, let's go.
Yeah,
whatever this is, I like it, let's keep doing it.
so then we get the cafeteria scene, right, where she's like preparing like her tasty as hell salad, drops the apple, Cullen just pops up, Edward Cullen pops up like straight up soccer player level, just picks up the apple, rolls it up his legs, like, here you go. But the dialogue in this scene, again, it's like, hello, another red flag alert. He says, "If I only said it would be better if we weren't friends, not that I didn't want to be." Immediately followed up by, if you were smart, you'd stay away from me. Get the fuck out of here.
What kind of gaslighting asshole are you?
And the thing is, like, I want to fault the Edward Cullen character, but 100% she's like, let's keep going.
Yeah.
Like, well, this is my jam.
I get this. You're just putting off this vibe to push people away. It's like, well.
Oh my God.
Listen,
Carol, literally, what if I'm not the hero? What if I'm the bad guy?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
That is something that a murderer says.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And again, like, huge series of red flags. Like, Bella character is absolutely a moron. And like, my heart goes out to Billy Burke's Charlie character because he deserves a better daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. She's pretty shitty to him. Oh. And then she goes on her little research mission to the bookstore.
Oh boy.
Where she almost gets attacked.
Right.
But good thing Edward was stalking her. I mean, looking out for her.
Straight up stalking. Again, hi, I'm a red flag. What's up again?
Yeah.
Like, what? You're just hanging out watching her from the alley. And he's like, oh, well, you don't know what they were thinking. Sir, I'm more interested in what you were thinking.
Also, can we circle back? In her place, I'm like, I'm sorry. What do you mean what you didn't know what they were thinking? For someone who has a series of superpowers, this is like the first time, and then like all of like a minute later, he re-says the whole I can read minds basically. She's like, so you can read minds? And he's like, yeah. Doesn't try to sidestep at all. Like, yeah.
Yeah, in the restaurant, it's like, I can read everyone's mind in here except for yours.
You intrigue me.
Yeah.
I did find this funny. Like, after he basically admits, like, oh yeah, you know, I can read minds, and essentially just admits, like, hey, I got some powers going on here. She's like, you should put your seatbelt on.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, oh, okay.
I generally wonder if, like, basically this was like a first take of the scene, and then like the moment they took the scene, they're like, got it. Like, it's just one of those like beautiful stars aligning moments, because like I feel that the actor playing Edward, what's his name, Robert Pattinson, I feel that his response there is like, you should put your seatbelt on. I feel like that was like a little too genuine, because he understood the ridiculousness of like the human character telling the vampire character, you should put your seatbelt on.
He's 109 years old. I think he's got this shit figured out.
Yeah, like he was there when the car was invented. Like, yeah. He's good.
She's yet to put it together. And the moment she pieces it all together and tells him, that is some dramatic, moving cinema.
Which is basically like the next scene, right? The next scene is like the forest scene, which it's super weird. Like, I didn't understand the setup. And I actually, when I watched it with you, Carol, the other day, because we were being morons and thought that like, hey, maybe let's watch Twilight, lol. When that scene happened, I re-remembered back watching this back in 2008 and being like, wait, what is happening here? They just show up to school at the same time. There's no dialogue between them at all. She doesn't look at him. She walks past him into like the forest behind school. And he's like, cool. And just follows her.
They hiked 2 miles away. They're like in the depths of the forest.
Yep, my man's just in his pea coat, just chilling. Just like, this is perfect weather for a hike. Perfect vestments for a hike. Let's go.
Oh, also, just a weird aside here: the weather and the dressing make no sense to me. One day it's like icy to the point bands are careening. Spitting in the face of physics, and then the next day they're out there playing frisbee with, you know, tank tops on,
right?
And it's like, oh yeah, whenever it's nice, the Cullens aren't around, nobody finds that weird. Anyway,
smash cut to the next scene, which, like, okay, I'm happy you brought that up, because okay, again, like, just trying to figure out like how they got here, for like, I guess how Stephanie Meyer got here. So they go to Forks because I guess it's just always cloudy in Forks, which like helps them kind of keep their shininess away from out of view from the plain folk. But wouldn't it just be better to, like, I don't know, go live in like Sweden where their winter is incredibly long and their days are like, you know, 3 hours of sunlight? Like, just do that. You'll be fine.
American vampires, Louis.
Alaska. Go to Alaska.
Oh, they were in Alaska. Well, that's where they moved from. But they can't stay in one place forever because people are going to catch on.
Catch on that these 30-year-old vampires are currently in school and eventually, like, their actual age should match up to the fact that they look 30 years old. Okay.
Yeah. The people who are riding, standing up on jeeps at 7 o'clock in the morning. They keep a very low profile.
Absolutely got to keep a low profile. Oh, and that's right. They're all just rich. Just stupid. Just very, very wealthy. But no, like, it boggles my mind that Ella is so already so accepting of... So she just did her, like, her Google research and found out, like, oh, he's a vampire. Cool. I'm going to wordlessly confront him and like, get the vibe. Let's go on a hike with him to a secluded scene in the middle of the forest where no one can hear me scream.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that she does that and she's like, and she starts to confront him and spit it out and he's like, say it, like all up breathily in her ear.
So aggressive.
Which like, I don't know, again, not a very comfortable vibe.
Yeah.
That mace that Charlie gave her earlier in the movie, it's just missing. He's gonna confront a vampire in a secluded location, no stakes anywhere near her or in her purse, no mace, she's just like, I think you're a killer, to like a serial killer. It's fine.
Yeah, that whole thing just, it made no sense from, I tried to wrap my mind like, well, maybe she, no, that doesn't. But if she was, that doesn't make sense either. Like, no, you're just gonna go confront a dude who you've known for a week. The first time he saw you, he almost vomited in his mouth. He disappeared for a week to get away from you. And then you find out he's a vampire and you go to be alone with him.
No weapons, no protection, no buddy system, nothing.
No.
Don't shoot a text off, be like, hey girls, go into the woods. If something happens, I'm with Edward.
Nothing. Like, not even, like, it's, oh. And, like, again, this is the era where, like, cell phones exist, right? And, like, I understand that, like, you know, the cell phone has basically single-handedly completely done away with the ability for horror movies to exist. But this is still a moment where, like, oh, cell phones exist. It would be fine if she used it a little more. But no, it's just left out of the script, you know? And then we get to like one of the most hilarious and not on intention, one of the most hilarious moments in the entire goddamn movie, which is when she hops up on his back and they run up a clear little treadmill into the mountains.
Like super fast and so ridiculous looking. I don't know how you can see that and not just die laughing.
I just don't understand. Like, again, choices were made, guys.
And he, like, also before that, I think, isn't he like pulling? He's like tugging on her arm, like, I need to show you what I look like. And then he like bolts up the mountainside with her on his back.
Yeah. He's basically like, hey, come with me. And then immediately after that, he has the whole like exposition dump about being the world's most dangerous predator.
Well, yeah.
I've killed people. Yeah. I wanted to kill you. Okay, John Wayne Gacy.
I'm designed to kill. And she's like, I don't care. I want to kill you. I've never wanted a human's blood so much. I trust you.
He tells her, don't trust me.
But when he's jumping around her, and he's like, as if you could outrun me. As if you could fight me off. And she's just like, I love you.
You're right, my own personal brand of heroin.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Boy, is that a hell of a line.
That was a good one.
Your scent is like a drug to me. Oh, my gosh.
You don't know how long I've waited for you. Like, that's just, again, creepy stalker.
Yeah, I mean, as he's telling her, like, how, like, I want to drink your blood. I've never wanted to eat a human like you. She's just basically, like, just going full Pepe Le Pew, like, just essentially just, like, pinning him up against a tree, like, oh, get over here, buddy. Like, you're speaking my language.
Oh, we forgot to mention when he reveals himself in the sunlight, and his skin is, like, sparkling diamonds. He's just, and, like, glitter bombed.
And she's like, you're beautiful.
You're beautiful.
I remember.
He's like, I'm not beautiful. I'm a killer.
And he's got such, like, horrible emo sad boy about it. He's like, I'm a killer.
Yeah.
And he glitters in the sunlight.
Yeah. I'm a tough boy.
Yeah. It's like that entire section of what, like, I would say like 4 minutes, like, that was the reason that boyfriends, like, souls died when they went to watch this movie with their girlfriends and were sitting there in theater. When that series of scenes happened, like, they all, like, lost a small bit of their soul at that moment. They're like, okay, yep, this is exactly what I thought it was gonna be. It's exactly what all my friends told me, warned me about. Thank God I love this girlfriend so much, like, yeah. Or fiance or wife or whatever, like, 100%. And then after this series of choices, my God, it then cuts directly to them laying in a meadow. What, like, Carol, was there something that happened in the books that the director was just like, oh, let's cut a massive amount of series out of this and then just keep this one scene?
No, this happens in the book. And he says to her, so the lion fell in love with the lamb. So the lions are just really, really gross.
Oh, man. I fell in love.
You just met. You literally just met.
They're having this conversation while literally, like, Edward is, like, straight up Pandora bracelet level sparkly. Just
yeah, just glistening.
Oh, man.
Let's see. I thought I took some more notes on that whole, on the whole glistening thing, because that was so ridiculous. Okay, yeah, so I guess they become close. He's trusting her. He tells her how he was saved in 1918 from the flu, you know. And basically that's how the good doc has changed everybody in the family. And he's just casually drops in that he, you know, stares at her as she sleeps.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. Yeah.
Which, again, like, I just, even if he wasn't a vampire, right? Like, even if, or, like, you know, no, even though he is a vampire, that's what I mean. Even though he is a vampire, that's still not cool.
No. Yeah.
Period.
He says to her a little later in the movie, she's like, do you do this a lot when he's in her room at night? He's like, only the past couple of months. Like, that's not a concern for her.
Yeah.
Wait, so at this time, it's been months that they've been around each other, Carol?
Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah. This is a little after when she goes to his house. But anyway, he's in her room at night and he's like, yeah, a couple months I've been watching you. And she's totally fine with that. She's like, oh, that's romantic.
I'm so again, and like, I don't want to make this a gender thing, but I just feel so left out of the loop that I 100% didn't understand why this was such a pop culture phenomenon that so many women seized on, like, on how this was such an epic love story, or such an epic, like just, you know, such an epic love story, kind of in the same way I didn't fully get the whole, basically, it's the exact same thing, but then slides out a couple years later for Fifty Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
But at least the 50 Shades of Grey is a very, like, specifically, it's sex and it's power dynamics, and I get that. Yeah. But, like, this is just so out of left field.
The same stuff, though, because it's, like, a guy who's just, like, straight up, like, stalking and, like, controlling and gaslighting. Yeah. It's messed up.
Yeah.
know why it was so popular.
But it gave us one of the most romantic lines of all time. When she jumps on his back and he tells her to, calls her his little spider monkey.
Yep, you better.
A line, I wrote this down as I watched this. Hang on, my little spider monkey. That line makes me so angry I could vomit in rage.
Yeah, it's gross.
It definitely deserves an award for like the most out of place line in almost any movie, or at least it's contending for the championship. So it's just bizarre again.
Nothing about. And the scenes that follow make no sense either. Like, we're going to jump from tree to tree. Yeah. Inexplicably, I'm right. Now playing the piano in a warehouse. And now...
there's like fog rolling in behind them. Yeah.
And now we're back outside. Like, I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Is this real?
The movie is edited is so bad. Like, I remember at one point, I don't know what scene it was coming from, but it just cuts like very dramatically to a scene of when the people are being murdered and it's like these other vampires murdering them. And it cuts right to that scene and it was like out of nowhere, it just comes so abruptly. Some of the way they put the scenes together was really not great.
Yeah, and just like, I mean, it's definitely, I'm sure it's a budgetary concern, right? Like let's be real, like they had blown the budget on making sure everything was wet at all times. So like they definitely didn't have a CG budget here. The CG budget was saved for later in the movie for things. I don't know. Maybe they had to like just keep the, maybe they went full mustache on Billy Burke's character and the mustache is CGI the entire time. We don't know. But it definitely is one of those moments where I'm like, oh my God, I wish they had budget for a better jumping scene. Because like the whole jumping from tree to tree thing, it is, I can only imagine what suspension of disbelief must be happening as the actors are filming this and as this is being captured, right? Like I understand that when if there's a Transformers movie and someone's just talking to a tennis ball all day, I get that. But the idea, and they cut the scene is the moment is so short, and it's Bella with her arm wrapped around Cullen, wrapped around Edward, and she's like, "Yeah, like let's go, Thunder."
He's just like scampering up a tree with her. I was like, "How is she really holding on? Like she's got to have a lot of strength to hold on to him." He's just like, they're going up like 300 feet in the air or something. Like it's
boy, ridiculous. So after this scene, they're doing the whole Bella comes to have breakfast with her dad Charlie again, which like I actually kind of I kind of like the whole breakfast, like he always has breakfast out, like I feel like it again it kind of breathes life into what this like kind of not obsessed with the job but like very dedicated to his job, lives alone, like you know doesn't have like the most beautiful house, he's just kind of like a very simple man. I love the idea of him going to the diner every day and kind of like, you know, kind of like getting the same thing and like all that. It definitely like it humanizes the character, but like, but this fucking time she's coming into the diner and the Mike Newton character is out there and just like weirdly confronts her. He's like, so like, you and Edward, huh? And she's like, yeah, like, you know, I guess. And he's like, yeah, I don't like it. I'm like, I have never wanted a character, like a female character, to punch a male character for such a short line so hard.
Well, also, I was like, okay, you've known her 2 weeks.
Right.
And you're already commenting on who you think she should be dating. Boy, if you don't get the hell away from her.
Oh, it's so bananas.
It's gross. Side note, Amber's going to call me in a few minutes, so let me just delete this part, Brian, but I'm going to have to call and talk to her for a few minutes, so
okay,
yeah. So if I step away, you know why, but do not talk about the baseball scene without me. Baseball scene, can we go?
Well, there? We can talk about the baseball scene now. I mean,
because it's the next scene, right?
Yeah, it's the next big scene. Yeah.
Bella says to her dad, I'm going on a date with Edward Cullen, and he's like, she's just gonna play a baseball game with my family. Like, what is baseball just like vampire's favorite
Edward clarifies, it's America's favorite pastime,
Carol. Yeah.
And apparently all these characters are American.
Yes.
Well, I mean, Edward's a Chicago. I mean, so there's that.
I think this might be the most important scene of the movie, right?
It's something, all right.
I mean, you're kind of right, Carol, in a way, because it establishes so much. So it is actually a really important scene wrapped up in a insane theme.
Yeah. My favorite tweet about like the Twilight movies, it says, remember when the Twilight baseball scene invented cinema? It's just so ridiculous, so dramatic, and they're so into the baseball. They just love baseball.
What I didn't understand is they're so serious about baseball to the point they have to wear jerseys, but no one uses a glove?
Right. They don't need gloves.
That's true. Only, I don't even think the catcher has a glove. Yeah, you're right. Nobody needs gloves.
Uh-uh. Nobody at all. And like, it's clear that they definitely put their heart, like they put their heart and soul on filming this scene. They're like, we finally have an outdoor scene. The entire cast is here. We're gonna smash this out of the park. Let's get a dope funky tune. Oh boy.
Also, what's with the vampires like calling people they love monkeys?
Oh yeah. Yes, Rosalie says my monkey man about Emmett.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that's gross. Just like spider monkey. It's disturbing.
It's disturbing that you're calling your pseudo brother lover.
Yes.
It's a lot.
Yeah, I just want to point out that we haven't talked about this yet. There are how many Cullen kids, quote unquote? There's five of them, right? Yeah.
Seven.
No, but the kids, not the adults. Yeah. Even though they're all the same age, clearly. No, there's Edward, Alice, Rosalie, Emmett, and Jasper. Okay, they're supposed to be adopted siblings, yet four of them are dating each other. Nobody seems to have a problem with this.
Well, and I think it was, what was it? Was it Christian Serratus' Angela that brings it up at like the first cafeteria scene?
Yeah.
It was Anna Kendrick's character that brings it up. And there's like—
I guess they're not related, but—
And that's it. And like, we're just supposed to be cool with it.
Yeah.
Oh boy. No, the baseball scene is something, all right. And like, I will say that the baseball scene is one of the most enjoyable parts of this movie, because they just let the baseball scene breathe, and they just allowed it to be fun and play with the ridiculousness of these characters and these powers.
Yeah.
That's generous.
I mean, the pause from both of you guys made like hurt me a little. I'll go take a nap.
No, the baseball scene is I'm just like, I've written so many things down, and they're all just like angry like scribblings of a man who watched this at like 11:30, and none of it makes sense. So I'm just like, no, that doesn't make sense.
The one of the parts that was really interesting about the baseball scene, and like, again, Carol, we need to leverage your expertise having read the books, because it, again, Brian, like you said, it, like, so much of this doesn't make sense, right? But we get to a new threshold of not making sense that I am blown away by, which is the bad guys come into the movie. They enter so dramatic. And why, oh, why was the choice made again? Whoever was like selling treadmills to the Twilight production team, they're like, guys, I've got another treadmill scene for you guys. Let's put the villains on a treadmill and have them walk super slow, but make the treadmill super fast.
In the cloud of fog.
Like, and that's how our villains get introduced to our main characters.
Yeah,
and one of them inexplicably has his shirt just wide open. Just
yeah,
Just, I mean, that's just,
they're just, these are really fashionable vampires too. They just have this whole vibe about them. But my favorite part, or my most hated part of the movie, actually several parts, but any dramatic scene, the music playing is like so ridiculous and obnoxious. I'm like, not, don't know a lot about music, so I can't even say, but I feel like it's like electric guitar or something. And it's like this awful noise. I wish I could play it right now because it's so bad, but it's like, this is drama. Like, that's the vibe.
I love that, that when the when the bad guy characters are there after their dope ass treadmill entrance, and again with like the most joyous of music choices, at that point in time, like, why are they so tense? Like, is this like a, are all vampire cliques, are they like the Bloods and Crips, and like they can't even be anywhere near each other at the same time?
Well, because the Collins are different, and their way of life is frowned upon by other vampires because they don't eat humans. And so they have a human there, so I think they're just all afraid for Bella's safety. But the most ridiculous advice is given to Bella. Bella, put your hair down. Don't we know that her flowing locks of hair and wind is the reason that like Edward was repulsed and like wanted to puke in his mouth? And like the scent, wouldn't it be like better to hide it under her hat?
And what were
they trying to accomplish there?
What was it? Was it Alice that said, like, that won't help? I could smell her from across the field.
Oh,
it was yeah. Rosalie's.
Yeah. Rosalie. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, I suppose like that does help clarify it a little bit, but technically these vampires don't know that the Cullens live here. We've never been told that. They don't know them. They don't know them from any other vampire squad. And like, it kind of seems like vampires are like kind of common.
Yeah.
Maybe not as common as like just normal people, but like, it seems like they're like, the movie's kind of making them out to be fairly commonplace. So at that point in time, like, it just, that part just didn't make sense as far as like their weird super tenseness. And like, obviously they offer to play baseball too, because like, why wouldn't you, right?
Yeah, they want to play the baseball game with them, which just makes me think all vampires love playing baseball.
common knowledge. Yeah.
That's the common denominator for all vampires. It's not drinking blood.
It's the vampires.
The best part, though, is when they finally discover there's a human there. Took them a few minutes, which is ridiculous. And they all, like, get into this, like, pounce, like, aggressive posture, and they all hiss at each other. Dumbest
scene. Oh my gosh, I think it was so insane. Again, like, the movie just makes so many leaps, like, immediately after the, like, after the, and it's like, well, I guess, like, I think Ida, or I'm gonna burn his name, Eddie Gathegi, his character is like, I guess the baseball game is over, blah blah, and they, like, they kind of put dreadlocks, dude. Yeah. But immediately Edward's character is like, James is a tracker, da-da-da-da, yeah. And, like, just exposition dump, and I was just like,
do it.
Yeah, bro, how did you know this?
Like, well, he does read minds, but still, it was like, so it was immediate. It was like, let's get the fuck out of here, Bella. We have to leave the country, practically. That's what I think Edward wanted to do.
Well, I mean, like, the pacing is just like so weird in this movie. Yeah. So for an hour and 20 minutes, it's just been this slow burn of like, will he let her in?
Painful glance.
And then all of a sudden, like, oh shit, we got 20 minutes left in this movie. Yes. Hey, here are some villains. And really they're going to interrupt the baseball game, and shit is real.
Oh, yeah.
No buildup. Just like, bam, here you go. We got to come up with an escape plan.
And then they have to drive to Phoenix from Washington.
Which... isn't that gonna like really show off the glittery skin?
Right. Yes. Yes. Alice and Jasper are in Phoenix with Bella, and it appears to be daylight, and they're not in works anymore, but they're not glittering. So I don't know.
No one's wearing hoodies. No one's got cloaks. They're just like just wearing very, very fashionable vestments. I think so right before they leave, Bella has again, and this is, I've made this note. I know it's not that important of a scene probably, but I made the note because again, I'm team Charlie. Like that's just the way I'm working, is that Bella storms out on Charlie. Like, and the whole plan is that she's supposed to be mean to him so that then like he won't chase her. It's staged on purpose. Obviously Charlie doesn't know, but again, it reinforces that like Bella at this moment became the villain of the movie for me.
Yeah, she was so mean.
And like later, like after she says like the nasty thing she does to her dad, she gets in the car and then she tells us and she tells us and Ed Cullen that, I'm sorry, Edward.
Ed.
Get it right.
We're calling him Ed now.
she tells Eddie in the car. She's like, I told him blank, blank, blank. That's exactly what my mom told him when she left. And I was like, yes. What?
You're the sociopath.
Yes. And there wasn't any need for her to go that far with it. Like, that was just cruel.
I'm going to find the moment that crushed you the most
yeah.
and repeat it to you verbatim.
It's unreal. Like Bella is, I obviously, I do not remember the rest of the movies. I do not remember the rest of the overall, and I know I watched like two more movies. I don't know. I really loved my girlfriend at the time. I have to believe that Bella is probably the most villainous character in this entire series franchise.
James is he's a vampire. I mean, vampire is gonna do vampire things. Can't really fault him too much on that. She could have just like run away. She didn't have to confront, you know, my man Charlie and with the pain, the reminder of the pain that he went through.
She could have literally spider monkeyed onto Edward's back and they could have just hopped into her bedroom window. Charlie would not have heard a single thing and she could have been like, pack that, pack that, pack that. And then she would just like go outside and they would just scamper away. Again, full yeah. clean getaway.
Yeah. And he's like, I just got you back. I'm like, Jesus God. Christ. Again, you're right. He's the best part of the movie. He's the best acting in the movie.
He is the soul of this movie and Bella is the weird whirlwind of plank that just consumes the movie and everyone is just swirling around her.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love the fact also that as she storms out in the damn car that he bought her. I'm like, how dare you mean like stupid child.
Also, the Cullens are wild rich. Why wouldn't you just take one of the super fast cars instead of the super slow old truck?
I also love like, and so for the most part, I've been talking about the decisions made in the movie, but I haven't been trying to rewrite any part of the movie. But here is where that changes because, okay, Edward can straight up read minds. So wouldn't the first person that you would want around Bella with her at all times be Edward so that he can basically have like a 360 like cerebro to make sure that James is nowhere nearby? Like,
right.
No, he goes off to like scatter her scent in different locations. It's, and like that doesn't require him at all.
Yeah. But don't worry because, Alice and Jasper's got it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Alice and Jasper.
What did I miss?
So useful. Oh, what'd you miss? You missed basically us reestablishing that Charlie is the soul of this movie and Bella is the ultimate villain of this franchise, most likely. Yes,
absolutely. So Alice and Jasper go to Phoenix. And Alice sketches from her vision a very rough sort of room with mirrors, and Bella's automatically like, oh, that's my old ballet studio from when I was a kid.
Yeah, because you remember that one, like, because we all remember that one activity that we were signed up in for like, I don't know, 3 months while our parents were just wanted us out of the damn house. We remember the exact layout of that location.
Yeah, it was like a rough charcoal drawing.
Yeah.
There's no way, but she knew exactly.
Oh, guys, I know exactly where we're going.
and then Alice and Jasper leave Bella alone. They're supposed to be like her bodyguards. They leave her alone, and she uses that time to like run away. And I'm skipping over it.
I get tricked by I'm getting tricked by a vampire, which had my handlers been here to warn me, like, I could be getting tricked by a vampire.
Which, again, and again, like, here's the part where I'm like, wait, what? She is scared of a vampire she just met. But, man, so she thinks that the 7 vampires that are helping her can't help her because of this one vampire that's scary. So she's known the 7 vampires. She's known overall the vampires exist for like 3 weeks at this point, right? So why the hell would she trust the one vampire she doesn't know to be like, oh, he's so scary, I have to go do what he says? No, man, tell the 7 vampires you're with. They'll be like, oh, okay, I got a sniper guy that shoots wooden stakes at like at the speed of sound. And like, maybe that's a thing. She doesn't know.
Yeah.
Oh, Bella. All your choices.
Yeah, and so she gets drawn away, and then turns out it's a trap. James has her, and he just attacks her. He beats the hell.
before he attacks her, this is so dumb. She like turns and looks at him, and it shows him like 6 different times because it's mirrored walls, and it's like you get the impression like Bella doesn't know which one is the real.
By the way, this isn't a house of mirrors. Right. This is just a ballet studio. The mirrors are flat on 2 sides of the room. That's it.
It's like very easy to pick this out, but again, yeah. Bella's an idiot.
Yes, she sure is.
I just love the fact that she knows, she even instantly recognizes the room. She's like, oh, that's my old ballet studio. Yeah. But when James is there, she's like, I can't tell which is him.
You have the home court advantage.
Right.
You know where every mirror is in this entire establishment, madam.
Ma'am.
I'm just, choices were made, and we were brought along on the ride.
Yes.
Oh. I found the final battle to be anticlimactic.
Very
much. It's like they looked at the timer and was like, oh shit, we got about like 7 minutes left.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
We got to wrap this shit up, B.
I'm happy that there was some kind of stakes, right? James, like, just what is it? He's like snaps her shin or something.
Yeah.
So he damages her leg, and she gets off like a decent scream. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, now it feels again like there are stakes. She's a squishy mortal. She's gonna bleed out real fast. We get the super weird scene with Edward where he has to like only drain a portion of her blood. Oh,
the venom of James from her blood.
You can let the change happen. Oh my
goodness. And the flashes he's getting during his blood sucking, like he flashes back to the deer.
You didn't know her when the deer happened. That's just a normal memory, sir.
Look, he flashes to the deer on a daily basis, guys. We just don't know this, okay? Truth be told, he raised that deer for like a solid like 8 years, and then he's like, you know what, one day he's just like, Bambi had to get it, that's it.
Bambi had to get it.
And then there's like her hiding in the closet of the dance studio just like randomly. I'm like, so were you like hiding from your parents fighting? Was there a bully? Right. Like,
yes, there was a home video that James used that was like, Bella, where are you? Why would have that been filmed on a home video?
Yeah, if I couldn't find my son, I don't think I'd break out the camera and then keep said video, you know, just for family memories. And
how many hours of family video footage did James have to sit through to find? find that art to lure Bella.
Turns out James is a straight up cinephile, guys. Like, his jam is home movies, and he's very good at combing through. Oh my God, you're right. That, like, he would have to sit there for hours. And mind you, these are VHSs, most likely. Yep. So it's one of those, like, you got to hit the rewind button. You got to, like, go make yourself a cup of coffee, a cup of fresh blood, come back, sit down again, hit play. Like, there's no scan function. There's no scenes menu. Like, you have to put in the work.
I didn't even think about it like that. Like, now I'm just, like, imagining him sitting there just stroking his chin like, huh, this is Grandma Ethel's birthday party.
Playing with his greasy ponytail the entire time.
And interesting. Just like twirling it. Interesting.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, there wasn't much to the fight scene at the end. It was just like, all right, we're done.
And James is dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and James is so dead. Like,
they had to repeat twice in the movie, like, we're gonna snap his limbs off and burn his body. Like, they like had to get it in there.
Well, it's like they talk about how lethal he is, and I'm like, yeah, you guys killed him pretty easily, actually.
Like, why couldn't they have, like, found him in forks and killed him?
It was like, we didn't have to come to Phoenix for this.
They all did a road trip to Phoenix.
I mean, if you just want to go to Phoenix, that's fine, but
it is, and again, like I said earlier, like, you're scared of one vampire, but you're rolling with seven, bro. Like, just tell your seven vampires to rip him to shreds and take his head off and make a sweet bonfire. And again, James is supposed to be this, like, hyper tracker, like this warrior of the vampire wastelands, if you will. And his head pops off like a straight up Lego, like,
and done.
Yeah. Oh man.
And that was the end of that. And it's like, okay, time for prom.
Yeah. Oh. Well, her reasons for for being in the hospital, and oh, yeah. It's super convoluted to me. It's like, yeah. Oh man, you fell down two flights of stairs and then out of a window.
Her mom just bought that. Her mom was like, oh, that tracks. That makes sense.
Yeah, I totally believe that. Yeah. You know, I've been thinking.
Are you sure you weren't beaten by, like, your 27-year-old boyfriend? And she's like, nah.
No, he wouldn't do that. They're like, okay, I believe you. God, I fell down two flights of stairs and out of a window. How fast were you falling down the stairs for it to propel you through a window?
I am so curious as to the building codes in Forks, Washington that allow windows to be so precariously soft, easily shatterable windows to be that precariously poised next to sets of stairs. I'm dying to see this building.
Yeah, she would have had to have been going at a pretty high speed, falling down the stairs to shoot out of a window.
Which means that she must have fallen down like 60 steps.
Yeah.
Just the longest flight of steps ever to, like, catch the speed to really, like.
But mind you, she doesn't have any, like, cuts on her head or her face. Just a broken leg. Yeah.
We got to keep our main character pretty.
A bite on her arm.
She bit herself as she was rolling.
Yeah.
One limb flew into her mouth. She's like, oh shit, ow.
The reason I feel like they like go to some lengths, and maybe it's more in the book, I can't remember, but to, like, give you the idea that Bella's so clumsy. And, like, look, and she trips and falls in the greenhouse, and Ed's just like, can't you at least look in front of you where you're walking? She's, like, always just, like, falling and stuff. And
seems like a dick move too, to be like, look at you, clumsy, you idiot. Can't even walk straight.
You're so stupid.
So I guess it's believable that this kind of traumatic accident would happen to her.
I mean, she slipped on the ice.
She did.
She fell in the greenhouse. Yeah, she's just a klutz. A beautiful, extremely alluring klutz.
That no one in Forks, Washington has ever seen anyone like her.
A glistening pale beauty from a sun-scorched part of the world, yes.
Oh, and then of course, she heals from her wounds. She gets to go to prom.
Wearing a boot.
a boot.
A boot.
So and I guess there was like, there's like what, a month and a half from her in the hospital to prom. Like it just flash forwards and like, she's like, everything's healed up minus the boot. And like, she's like, all right, yeah, we're in prom, I guess.
Their school calendar really confuses me.
Yes.
Like, so when she starts there, it's the beginning of the school year, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
It feels like it was, or maybe in just in my head, she's starting a new school. It's the beginning of the school year. Maybe I just added that, but.
That's what it felt like to me, but I don't know.
Oh, I always just thought it was like, oh, she like, you know, her mom wants to go be a roadie for baseball. Again, baseball is a very big recurring theme here, guys.
Look, definitely. The lady that wrote this book, she is huge into baseball.
Baseball just sets her on fire. Stephanie Meyer is all about it. But yeah, no, I more so got the whole thing that mom is like a little flighty. She's gonna go chase her thing, chase her boy, and then so Ella's like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to Forks, and I think that's kind of like the vibe that we were supposed to get at the beginning of the movie, where she's kind of like, you know, just awkwardly one bathroom, you know,
one bathroom only.
You know what? I'm glad she broke her leg.
You know what? I am too.
But yeah, they go to prom. Jacob is weirdly standing outside with his long hair flowing.
Like, dressed up. He didn't need to get dressed up either.
Yeah. He just wore a tie to sit next to her and be like, my dad paid me to talk to you.
My dad paid me to tell you we'll be watching you. And she's like, haha, that's fine. What?
That's cool. My boyfriend met me that way, you know, watching me sleep. Tee-hee.
I just don't understand what Babe in the Woods ass, like personality Bella has. That she's like, oh, all these extreme predators around me. She's like, that's cool.
Yeah.
She's just down for it, man.
She loves it.
And then she
just walked out of the woods to get there.
Yeah.
And then he just walked back into the woods.
And then of course she's all mad at him because he won't turn her into a vampire.
Yeah.
So, and, I'm like, yeah, you're 17.
Right. There's a moment where she thinks he's gonna do it and he's like joking and he just kisses her neck. But like, you're dancing at prom, and granted they're on the gazebo outside, but still, you think he's gonna like suck your blood right now and do this right now at prom?
Shoot. Carol, do you not get what gazebos are for? I mean, I thought that's what all gazebos were for. It's like, oh, I can't wait to turn into a vampire. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me roll through.
My neighbor has a gazebo, and I'm going to look at her a whole lot different
now. Oh, man.
Oh, man. No. I mean, like, so what were your overall thoughts on this movie, right? And like,
we're not done.
What's that?
We're not done.
We're not done.
Yeah, did you not finish?
No, I finished.
Okay, because there's a moment at the end where we haven't mentioned this character yet, but one of the evil villain vampires is a woman who I think was in love with James. I think they were like partners or something. And she appears in the window watching Edward and Bella at the end. She's just this woman at prom. Like, nobody thought that was weird.
There's a obvious like 35-year-old woman just standing up there staring at the high schoolers.
Dressed for prom.
Like, all right. And very lax rules here.
Yeah, that's how the movie ends. She's just like staring at them and then walks down the stairs with a smirk on her face. Like,
dun, so. Dun, dun.
Really makes you want to go to the second movie now, doesn't it?
I genuinely thought that the woman at the end of the movie was just the woman from the trio of vampires earlier.
It is.
Yeah, okay. So, like, I mean...
You didn't think it was weird that she was watching them?
Well, yeah, I thought it was weird, but it was more so like...
There's a lot weird in this movie.
That's true.
So much. Yeah, there's so much.
Oh, no, she wants to kill Bella now. And Edward, probably. And probably the whole Cullen family.
The Cullen clan.
Yeah, they don't really get into it, but I do remember in the book, I think she and James were like lovers, and she's upset that they killed her man.
Well, they snapped off his limbs and threw him in the fire. So, yeah. I mean, That would make me a little upset, I suppose.
Maybe she's just upset they didn't get to play baseball.
That could be.
Had they invited her to play baseball, this all could have been avoided.
Yeah, right.
There we go. Oh, man, I do not. I am so happy that I don't remember any of the other movies. Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Thank God that memory fades over time.
God, I hope these memories fade.
I feel like we need to watch them now.
So one thing that I would say, you know, there's just, this movie is just rife with just choices that I don't agree with, and writing styles. I don't, just, there's a lot going on, right? But I think that I have watched my fair share of movies that I'm like, oh, you know what, like, this movie's not really great, but it's got a good couple pieces to the movie that I'm like, oh, these are really great ingredients, and they were presented well, and, like, you know, I enjoyed them. But I just feel that they bungled the villains so badly, and they spent so little time on them.
Yeah.
That genuinely, it just, I could not care less. I cared more about Mike Newton, the guy, like the dumb boy at school. Like genuinely cared more about him, because he had to have had at least equal screen time as the bad guys.
Yeah.
They're just they're a footnote at best.
Well, yeah, they ran out of time. Like Brian said, there was like 20 minutes left in the movie, and they're like, okay, now we're gonna introduce these guys.
Even earlier in the movie, they just didn't set them up for any kind of meaningful anything. And like whenever they would show the vampires, they would show them like sing-songy and kind of like hissing and like talking in like riddles before they ate the person they were going to eat, or like tore them to shreds, or I don't know, just played with his insides. I don't really know if they ate him, because again, we got the whole like blurry cut away from the violence, because it's still PG-13. But like, even if we saw them chase someone down, and we did see that at the security guard, the first victim in the movie, mm-hmm. but like, we didn't see them do anything, we just caught a lot of shaky cam. So if we had at least seen them like see James, like where he's supposed to be the Uber tracker, running after the guy and like rounding the corner, like grabbing onto a cement pillar and like literally ripping the pillar to propel himself forward, we would at least get some kind of sense of like, oh wow, these are like powerful creatures, the ultimate predator. And then maybe like Edward's lines about being the predator later wouldn't fall so hilariously flat. Yeah.
He's a glistening killer.
Yeah, like just something so that the villains mean something. And like, you could have literally used the villains as a way to showcase how powerful the even our friendly vampires are. But they're like, nah, it's cool.
We'll focus on the creepy part.
We'll focus on the creepy, awkward interaction.
Yes.
I think that is the smallest thing that they could have done to literally set up the entire franchise better, so that it wouldn't be so laughably difficult to watch later on.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I don't think I can watch the second one.
But Brian, there's werewolves coming.
Oh, they're gonna show up. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh boy. I can't make that promise.
Brian, I will tell you that the CG scene when the Taylor Lautner character finally goes full werewolf, the CG,
spoiler alert,
so hilariously bad that even if we don't watch it and don't discuss it on your podcast, I'm gonna go YouTube that scene. I want this disaster to happen. It's like watching a car crash. I can't wait.
I might have to watch it. I can't make that promise. Right now, this is still too fresh.
The most horrific part of the whole saga comes at the end, the last movie, with the CGI vampire baby.
You sent me a picture of that baby, and I wish you hadn't, because boy, did it haunt me.
Haunt your dreams.
I know that there's some really interesting trivia about the baby, but for the life of me, I cannot remember what it was any longer. But it was basically like, you know, I'm not going to go into it now. That's something that we would discover, because Brian is obviously going to ask us to watch the rest of the movies, and I know that he's hanging on bated breath for that piece of trivia in movie like 17 or whatever it is at the end.
That's got to be it.
Definitely. I can see you. I can see the vibes you're putting out. That's what you want.
Obviously. You're picking up what I'm putting down. I dig it.
Well, this has been a joy.
Yes. And to the listener, you're both welcome and I'm sorry.
We're sorry.
I'm so sorry.
I hope that that the listener enjoyed coming on this journey with us. I hope that they are able to feel our discomfort as part of this journey. And I hope that if there were any first time viewers of the movie, that this podcast was the reason that they broke edge, and they're like, "I'm gonna watch Twilight. Let's go."
Yes, join us on this painful journey. They say pain makes art. This is my masterpiece.
Oh man, it's been such a fun time. This has been awesome.
Yes,
yeah, so I appreciate you for inviting me, Brian. This has been great. It's my first podcast recording ever. This is, and we chose quite the cinematic journey.
Yeah. Thank you for suggesting this, Carol. I am both appreciative and angry at you.
Brian says thank you, but I can already picture that in the next 5 minutes you're getting unfriended, Carol.
I would never do that. I would mute. Oh, well, I'm gonna get to editing this beautiful piece of work here.
All right.
But thank you guys for carving out time on your Friday to talk about the cinematic masterpiece from Stephanie Meyer's Twilight.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks so much, Brian. Take it easy, man.
All right, I'll catch you guys later.